I want you to take a second and think back, like really think back to your absolute favorite teacher.
Oh, yeah, everybody has that one teacher.
Right, you know the one. That specific educator who somehow managed to create just the perfect, incredibly memorable lesson plan that made a really difficult subject finally click for you.
The one who put in all those extra hours.
Exactly. Maybe it was a totally unique way of explaining fractions using pizza slices,
No.
or, I don't know, a historical role-playing game that made the Civil War feel completely real.
Or just a brilliantly structured worksheet that finally untangled the mysteries of chemistry for you.
Yeah. Just think about the sheer creativity, the late night hours, and the deep care it took for them to build that specific framework just for your class.
It takes an immense amount of intellectual heavy lifting to synthesize complex information like that into something digestible
Oh, for sure.
and making it engaging for a room full of students. That kind of pedagogical architecture is a highly specialized skill. It requires trial, error, and deep psychological insight into how people actually learn.
And for today's deep dive, we are looking at a stack of research that reveals a pretty startling reality about those exact, brilliant, teacher-created lesson plans.
Because right now, in real time, those materials are quietly being absorbed by artificial intelligence.
Right. And our mission today is to explore the incredibly complex intersection of education, intellectual property, and AI.
And more importantly, we're going to uncover how a brand new movement is trying to give teachers their ownership back.
Okay, let's unpack this. The basic premise we are looking at is that as AI tools become ubiquitous in classrooms, corporate training platforms, and content creation workflows, well, teachers' original materials are being scraped en masse.
What's fascinating here is that we often talk about AI scraping in the context of, famous visual artists or major news organizations.
Right, or celebrity authors like George R. R. Martin.
Exactly. We rarely view it through the lens of the everyday classroom educator, but we are looking at a massive, largely unacknowledged transfer of value.
Yeah, it really is.
You have a demographic teachers who literally shape the next generation with their creative output, and yet they are unwittingly feeding the algorithms of billion-dollar technology companies.
And we aren't just talking about an AI reading a generic public domain textbook here.
No, not at all.
The AI is training on their custom worksheets, their unique classroom frameworks, the curriculums they've developed from scratch over decades, all their interactive activities, literally everything.
And it is all happening without any transparency, without protection, and definitely without compensation.
When I was reading through this, I was trying to think of the right way to frame it for you listening. At first, I thought it was like stealing a recipe.
Like a secret family
Yeah,
recipe.
exactly. It's like a master chef who spends years perfecting a secret family recipe only for a robot chef to peek through the kitchen window, memorize the recipe, and start selling it across the street for free
Wow.
without ever giving the original chef credit. But honestly, it feels much closer to, I guess, digital eminent domain.
Oh, that's a really interesting way to put it.
It's like a massive tech giant deciding to build a multi-billion-dollar superhighway right through the middle of a teacher's intellectual property.
Right, they just pave over the creator's hard work.
Exactly. They claim it's for the public good or inevitable technological progress, but they never actually pay for the land they seized.
Eminent domain is a much sharper way to conceptualize what is happening here. They are paving over the individual creator's value to build an infrastructure they will subsequently toll.
Yeah, they're going to charge us to drive on it.
Right. And if we look at the reality of the teaching profession, educators are notoriously undercompensated to begin with.
Definitely.
Their primary professional capital often lies entirely in their own creativity, their ability to invent a new way to explain an old concept.
Right, their unique spin on things.
So when their specific frameworks and carefully calibrated assessments are absorbed into the AI hive mind, they lose control over their defining professional assets.
Right, because if an AI can just spit out a perfect replica of a teacher's highly refined curriculum to anyone who prompts it, that teacher's original hard work is completely devalued.
It's commodified instantly.
Yeah, instantly. So naturally, you have to wonder what the recourse is. I mean, banning AI from the classroom entirely seems like a complete non-starter at this
Oh,
point.
yeah, the genie is definitely out of the bottle.
So if banning it isn't the answer, what is? I was looking at the work Dr. Carrie Oberbrenner is doing with his platform Instant IP, and his approach is really compelling because it comes from a deeply personal place.
Yes, Dr. Oberbrenner is the driving force behind a new awareness campaign called Protect the Teacher IP.
And he has a really specific connection to this, right?
He does. He has explicitly stated that teachers gave him the gift of belief, hope, learning, and growth, crediting them with making him who he is today.
That's amazing.
But his motivation isn't just sentimental. It is fundamentally pragmatic. He is a 14-time author and a TEDx speaker who actually had his own books and TEDx content stolen and absorbed by AI.
So he has that visceral firsthand experience of seeing his life's work scraped.
Exactly. He knows exactly how it feels.
But here's where it gets really interesting, and maybe you can help me unpack this. Oberbrunner says he actually isn't anti-AI.
Right, he isn't.
In fact, he explicitly argues that artificial intelligence can save teachers time, increase their creativity, and improve learning experiences.
I feel like there's a contradiction here.
How so?
Well, how can a teacher happily use an AI tool to help build a lesson plan faster, but then turn around and cry foul when the AI uses their lesson plan to get smarter? You can't really sue the machine you're using to do your job, can you?
It's a highly intuitive pushback, for sure. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, Oberbrunner's core philosophy resolves that tension.
Okay, lay on me.
The premise he is operating under is that AI itself is not the enemy. The technology is a neutral tool and a highly effective one.
Right, the tool itself isn't bad. The real problem, the crux of the issue, is the one-way street of the current economic model. His argument is that teachers shouldn't be expected to give away their intellectual property for free.
Especially while these AI companies leverage that exact data to build multi-billion dollar valuations.
Exactly. The issue isn't the existence of the machine. It's the lack of consent and compensation in how the machine is fueled.
Okay, I see. It's the difference between a mutually beneficial partnership and, well, outright exploitation.
Exactly. As Oberbrunner points out, teachers deserve three specific things: attribution, protection, and compensation.
So they need to be credited for their frameworks.
Yes, they deserve the right to shield their work from being scraped. And if their work is utilized to build a commercial product, they deserve to be paid for it.
Which seems completely fair.
Right. They should not have to choose between utilizing a modern tool and forfeiting their intellectual property rights. They could do both.
That makes perfect sense. But it directly brings us to the mechanics of this, because this is where the rubber meets the road.
The actual implementation.
Let's be real for a second. A high school chemistry teacher grading papers on a Sunday night is not going to hire a high-powered legal team to put a Silicon Valley tech giant on trial.
No, of course not.
Traditional intellectual property protection like patents, complex copyright filings, trademark registrations, that whole system requires lawyers, thousands of dollars, and months or years of waiting.
It is a system built by and for large corporations.
So how does a regular teacher actually protect a Tuesday afternoon worksheet?
That is the exact systemic friction that has historically prevented everyday creators from protecting their work, and is precisely what Instant IP is attempting to bypass.
Okay, so how do they do it?
The platform utilizes blockchain-based protection to establish an irrefutable time-stamped record of a teacher's ideas.
When I was reading about how they actually enforce this, the blockchain element really stood out to me.
That's a game changer.
Because, you know, blockchain is one of those terms that gets thrown around as a buzzword, but here it has a very specific utilitarian function.
It does.
So instead of hiring a lawyer, it's like a digital wax seal on a letter. The blockchain acts as an indestructible digital notary that says, I, the teacher, invented this specific worksheet on this exact date at this exact time.
It's irrefutable proof of origin.
But here's where I'm still a little fuzzy on the actual execution. Let's say I have a digital timestamp that proves I wrote a lesson plan in 2023.
Okay.
Then OpenAI releases a model in 2025 that flawlessly replicates my lesson plan. My timestamp doesn't automatically empty OpenAI's bank account into mine.
No, it doesn't.
So how does a digital notary actually force a trillion-dollar company to care or to compensate the teacher?
That is the pivotal question. A timestamp alone does not automatically trigger a payout. What it does is fundamentally shift the legal burden of proof, which is everything in IP law.
Okay, break that down for me.
Historically, if an AI scraped your blog or your lesson plan, you couldn't easily prove that you were the undeniable original source.
Right. They could just say the AI generated it on its own.
Exactly. They could argue the AI just hallucinated something mathematically similar from a million different data points. You had no concrete prior art.
Ah, so it builds an evidentiary foundation that AI companies can't just hand wave away.
Precisely. By creating this blockchain-backed record, you establish cryptographic prior art.
cryptographic prior art. That sounds serious.
It is. If an AI company later tries to claim that a specific, highly detailed classroom framework was just spontaneously generated by their algorithm, the teacher has the mathematical proof.
They can just say, no, I created this, and I can prove exactly when I did it prior to your model crawling the web.
Exactly.
But I mean, one teacher with a timestamp is still just one teacher. They still can't afford the lawyer to sue the AI company.
True. But imagine 10,000 teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Or 100,000 teachers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If you have a massive, verified database of time-stamped intellectual property, you now have the undeniable foundation for collective bargaining or a massive class action lawsuit.
So it's strength in numbers, backed by math.
You move from a disorganized group of people saying, I think they stole my idea, to a unified coalition saying, here is the cryptographic proof of our prior art.
Wow. Okay. That entirely changes the power dynamic. If AI companies want to be legally compliant and avoid existential copyright infringement suits, they might eventually be forced to license these verified databases.
Exactly. Rather than just scraping the internet indiscriminately.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's highly analogous to how the music industry operates with organizations like ASCAP or BMI.
Right, the music rights groups.
Yeah, those organizations catalog who owns what song, and they force broadcasters or streaming services to pay blanket licensing fees.
So Instant IP is trying to be like ASCAP for teachers.
By cataloging and proving ownership at scale, a platform like Instant IP creates the infrastructure needed to force the tech companies to the negotiating table.
And the scope of what they are encouraging teachers to protect is massive. It's not just big textbook drafts.
No, it's everything.
Educators are being told to identify all of their IP classroom frameworks, assessments, presentations, workshops, videos, and training materials. Basically, if you used your brain to create it, you should seal it with that digital notary.
Which is why we are seeing an aggressive push for rapid adoption right now. The mechanics of the technology only work if there is a critical mass of users.
Right, which brings us to the actual real-world campaign they're running to get those users on board.
The Protect the Teacher IP campaign.
Yes, Instant IP has launched this specific initiative, and they're clearly trying to build a grassroots movement to get that critical mass.
They're pulling out all the stops.
They're offering teachers their very first idea protection credit for absolutely free, plus they have educator discounts, and they've even set up an affiliate program.
Which is really clever.
Yeah. If a teacher uses the platform and then introduces their peers to it, the original teacher actually benefits. For anyone listening who wants to see exactly how this is playing out, the campaign is currently running at instanttip.today/teacher.
The structure of that campaign is explicitly designed to lower the barrier to entry to absolute zero.
Make it as easy as possible.
Exactly. But the most revealing aspect of this entire initiative isn't the affiliate program. It can be found in a direct quote from Dr. Oberbrenner, regarding the philosophy of intellectual property.
Oh, I know the one you mean.
He says, you don't protect your IP when you're big. You become big by protecting your IP.
So what does this all mean? That is a phenomenal quote, by the way. And when you really look at the subtext of that statement, this initiative is fundamentally asking teachers to completely rebrand themselves.
It really is a paradigm shift.
Think about it. Historically, society has treated teachers as and expected them to act like endlessly selfless public servants.
Always giving, never taking.
There is this deeply ingrained, unspoken expectation that they should just donate their entire lives, all their off-the-clock hours, and all their brilliant intellectual frameworks to the system, you know, for the greater good of the students.
This campaign is flipping that narrative.
It's saying, no, you are creators. You are inventors, and you have incredibly valuable portfolios of intellectual property that are actively being targeted by the largest corporations on Earth. It is completely changing their job description.
This raises an important question, because applying the concept of becoming big by protecting your IP to public education is actually a radical inversion of the traditional power dynamic.
How so?
For decades, teachers have been at the bottom of the educational hierarchy in terms of compensation and systemic power, despite being the fundamental engines of the system.
True.
Transitioning them from passive employees of a school district to active, protected owners of their professional creations provides a mechanism to ensure they are compensated fairly in a highly digitized economy.
Which is an incredible shift, but it also brings up a really wild sociological implication. And I want to really pull on this thread with you because it might be the most fascinating part of this whole deep dive.
Okay, let's hear it.
If platforms like Instant IP are successful and every teacher starts timestamping, protecting, and legally owning every single Tuesday afternoon worksheet and historical role-playing game they ever create, what happens to the staff room?
That is perhaps the most profound tension in this entire movement.
Right. Education, at its core, is built on a culture of open communal sharing.
It always has been.
The staff room has traditionally been a collaborative space. One teacher says, "Hey, my kids were struggling with fractions, so I designed this pizza slice game, and it worked beautifully. Here are the copies for your class."
Exactly. That is how the system survives.
So if I'm a teacher and I suddenly know my pizza slice fraction game is a verified cryptographic asset that could theoretically generate licensing revenue, do I stop sharing it for free?
Head to the sphere.
Does the staff room turn into a marketplace? Like, sure, you can use my fraction game for your second period class, but that'll be a $5 licensing fee. It feels like the very act of protecting our work might inherently change the way we are willing to share it with our peers.
It absolutely risks corporatizing the micro-interactions of educators. But we have to look deeper and ask why teachers relied so heavily on that communal free-sharing model in the first place.
Okay. Why did they?
Historically, it was often a survival mechanism in an underfunded system. You shared your resources because your colleague across the hall was just as overworked and under-resourced as you were.
That is such a great point. They shared for free because nobody had any money anyway. They were all in the trenches together.
Exactly. But now, billion-dollar AI companies are hoovering up that communal goodwill.
Yeah, that changes everything.
The open-source model of the staff room was beautiful when it was strictly peer-to-peer. It becomes deeply exploitative when a sophisticated algorithm monetizes that open source culture on a global scale without giving anything back to the original creators.
So it's not that teachers necessarily want to charge each other. They just don't want to be strip mined by big tech.
Precisely. The challenge moving forward will be designing licensing structures that are nuanced enough to allow for free, frictionless peer-to-peer sharing within a school building while simultaneously walling off the tech giants.
Almost like a Creative Commons license for education. You know, you can use my lesson plan if you are a human being teaching 30 kids in a room.
Right.
But if you are a massive language model scraping the internet to train a commercial product, you have to pay the toll.
That is exactly the kind of legal nuance that will need to be developed. We are essentially watching a fundamental renegotiation of the social contract of teaching.
It's wild to watch it unfold in real time.
The technology to protect the work is now available. The cultural adaptation to that technology will be the defining challenge of the next decade in education.
It really is a brave new world. And it brings us to the core takeaway for you listening right now.
The big picture.
The age of artificial intelligence isn't just about what these fascinating algorithms can generate on the front end. It is equally, if not more, about what they are silently consuming on the back end to get there.
That's the part we often ignore.
Whether you are a teacher building a curriculum, a writer crafting a story, a coder designing a new plugin, or just someone who creates really efficient, original workflows at your office job, your ideas have inherent measurable value.
You truly do.
Initiatives like the one we explore today serve as a fascinating blueprint for how everyday people, not just massive corporations, can start to assert ownership and establish an evidentiary foundation to protect their digital footprint.
It is a blueprint for individual agency in the AI economy. Mm. And, you know, as we watch the dynamics of the traditional staff room evolve into an environment of licensed, protected intellectual property, we are reminded of something crucial.
What's that?
Innovation always demands a recalibration of how we value human creativity. If every teacher owns their IP, will the staff room become a marketplace of licensed materials rather than a space for free communal sharing? Does protecting our work inherently change the way we share with our peers? It's something we all need to mull over as this technology progresses.
We hope this exploration empowers you to keep asking the big, difficult questions about the information you consume and the brilliant ideas you create every single day. The landscape is shifting quickly, and knowing how to navigate it is the first step in ensuring you don't get left behind. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today. And the next time you think of that favorite teacher who finally made the material click, remember that their brilliant ideas are not just fond memories. They are valuable assets worth fiercely protecting.